In recent years, Hollywood studios have come across a new way to make even more money. It's called the reboot. Rather than come up with new ideas, they take old ones and they recycle them. And they do this particularly well with comic book characters. So think about all of the Spider-Man movies that have been made, or Batman, or Superman, or Iron Man. Usually these films do focus on men, although apparently the studios have actually figured out that the majority of moviegoers are women. And so soon we're going to start getting female superheroes being rebooted too. Now, central to this narrative enterprise is an origin story. We have to be told how the hero became who he is. Where did this titanic figure come from? What shaped him? Where did he start out? And usually, we learn that this titanic figure began as some twerp, or victim, or jerk, a nerd, indeed. Basically, someone like you and me. And the idea is that we can identify with this figure as he goes on to attain abilities and powers that are beyond comprehension. Now, this template is not novel. And indeed, it stands as testament to the notion that there is nothing new under the sun, because the origin story formula can be found right here in Scripture. Just look at the character of Joseph. We all know what's going to happen to Joseph, right? He's going to wind up Pharaoh's right-hand man. He is going to save Egypt. He's going to save his family. He is going to become a truly significant individual. But before the big office, before all of the glory and the power, Joseph starts off as what? A callow, annoying teenager. Now, we know that there are many teenagers in this world who are fine, upstanding, impressive individuals. Indeed, we have been blessed with more than our fair share of them in this congregation. Still, this stereotype is something we recognize. And perhaps some of us may have been like Joseph at the age of 17, self-absorbed and a bit clueless. All of our worst impulses encouraged by well-intentioned parents. Joseph is not an impressive figure in today's reading from Scripture. He's a tattletale. And he annoys his brothers. Boy, does he annoy them. So much so that, as we read, they want to kill him. Now, the lesson that Brian read a few moments ago suggests that the source of their animus was this long-sleeved robe, which many of us would recognize as the coat of many colors from the King James Version of the Bible, or, if we like musical theater, as the Technicolor dream coat. Andrew Lloyd Webber was on to something when he gave the garment that name, because for reasons that are not clear to me or many commentators, the people who put together the lectionary removed verses 5 through 11. And in those verses, we read how Joseph has dreams, which he shares with his brothers and then with his father. And in the first dream, he talks about being out in the fields and their sheaves of wheat. And the brothers' sheaves bow down before Joseph's. This does not endear him to them. And then, continuing in his obliviousness, after he has another dream in which the sun and the moon and 11 stars bow down before him. But he tells the story, not only to his brothers, but to his father. And his father's indignant. And his brothers seethe. They're angry, they're envious, they're covetous, they're resentful. And so they decide that they are going to put Joseph in his place. They're not going to give him a dressing down, though. They're not going to take him out behind the proverbial woodshed. But as they say in the intelligence community, they were going to deal with him with extreme prejudice. They were going to kill Joseph. And the opportunity presents itself. He comes along, having been sent by his father to check in. And they want to kill him. They're going to commit fratricide. Reuben puts a stop to that plan. Now, he's not exactly a profile in courage here. It's not as if he says to his brothers, it's wrong for us to kill Joseph. We're going to take him home. No, instead, he wants to be clever, not extend himself too far. He says, let's throw him in the pit. Now, we're told that this pit has no water, which suggests it's a cistern. You can't climb out of a cistern. So instead of actively killing Joseph, Reuben's suggesting that they do it passively. They can toss him in there. He has no food. He's stuck. Now, Reuben's idea, of course, is that he is going to pull him out later on and bring him home. But things don't quite work out that way. Because the caravan comes along. And Judah has the bright idea of selling Joseph. He's our brother. We shouldn't hurt him. So instead, let's just sell him into slavery. Nobody is looking good here so far, are they? We have Joseph who is self-absorbed. We have the brothers who are consumed with anger and fury. And then there's Jacob. Talk about the irony of what happens here. Jacob, who rose to prominence through trickery, who stole his older brother's blessing by deceiving his father. There's a reason Jacob's other sons do not like to hear Joseph talk about how they're going to bow down before him. They know that in their family there is a tradition of the younger one seizing what rightfully belongs to the elders. And now, the sons of Jacob decide to perpetrate a trick on the trickster. And from where Jacob sat, it doesn't matter that Joseph isn't truly killed because he thinks he's dead. And in his old age, his heart is broken. His dreams are shattered. Remember a few weeks ago, we read the story of Jacob in the wilderness, and we talked about the dream he had of the angels traveling up and down the ladders, about how God's reality was breaking forth in this world, and in that moment, the Lord had promised Jacob that he would inherit the land. He would father a great people. Now the dream seems to have died. All the hopes for the future are gone. This is a bleak passage. And yet we choose to read it during worship. That choice, indeed, its inclusion within our sacred book, is one of the things that points to what I believe is the truth of our scripture. Not necessarily historical facticity, but the truth, the fundamental truth of what is here. We tell stories about ourselves that are not flattering. Because we in the church, in claiming Israel's story as our own, are claiming these ancestors as our own. Remember who the people of Israel were. Slaves liberated by God from bondage in Egypt. Slaves who were able to always remember that they had once been free. Indeed, people who could say, we had been prosperous in this land. Indeed, one of ours had saved this country. We are important. All true. But with a reminder that the great man and those forebears who made good in a strange place started off as a snotty kid and a bunch of malcontent siblings. When you watch those superhero movies, the writers seem to feel a need to spend lots of time explaining the costume. Why Batman has a cowl. Why Superman has an S. That one is fair, since I assume that they did not use the Latin alphabet on Krypton. But they go into great depth here about why these costumes had to be worn and why they are important to the ability of the hero to do his or her work. Joseph, too, had a special garment. But unlike Batman or Superman, he has to be stripped of his coat to begin to grow. He has to lose something. As I was reading this passage, I found myself thinking of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. FDR got off to a very fast start in politics as a young man. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of his cousin Theodore. He was able to serve as Assistant Secretary of the Navy. And then, in what looked like an opportunity to even overtake him and to get to the presidency faster, he was nominated to run for vice president in 1920. As you all know, the Cox-Roosevelt ticket did not prevail over Harding Coolidge. But the young Roosevelt made a name for himself. But he also drew some criticism. People said there was no bottom there. There was no depth. He was just a good-looking, well-bred young man. And then he was stricken with polio. Now, I don't believe that God afflicts us with pain and suffering so that we will grow. That would speak to a God who is cruel. But I think God does invite us to draw on faith during times of adversity to chart a way forward. That by drawing on faith, by drawing on God, we can say no to the powers of darkness and pain and despair and ennui that threaten to overwhelm us. Yes, it is true that this can be easier said than done. But this is what God asks of us. This is what the authors of Scripture suggest by telling this story. You noticed in today's lesson, there is no mention of God. But when this part of Genesis was pulled together, there was an assumption that God was present. God was working behind the scenes, equipping and shaping and forming. Joseph's big failing in this passage is to think that the dreams are something that he does and that they are all about him. Later, he will realize and come to understand that the dreams are something done by God and that they are not about him, but about things that can happen in God's world. And once Joseph understands that, he is able to serve. And he saves his family. And he saves a nation. To be dressed for success, Joseph needs to lose his coat. That's true for you and me too. Scripture tells us if we want to think that we've got all the answers, we are welcome to travel that path. We can think we understand everything, and if we do so, then we are going to be self-absorbed, self-righteous, self-confident, and we are going to be deluded. And we will wind up just like this family. We may mean well. Jacob surely meant well when he gave Joseph that coat. He did it out of love. But he didn't think about the impact that that was going to have on the rest of his family. Jacob, though, held on the message of Joseph's dream. He came to understand what that meant later on. And the brothers, when they went down to Egypt, they too had grown, and they were prepared to reconcile, to admit that what they had done was wrong. And Joseph, in his position of great power, knew not to lord it over them, but to help them and to love them. So you and I are invited, like Joseph and others throughout the ages, to be dressed for success. We just don't do it the way the world suggests we should. But instead, we set aside those things we think are important. And in doing so, we create space for God through His Spirit to work in us and through us, to lead us forward, to help us grow into the people that God would have us be.